Oh my goodness. Election day is here. Are you guys excited, nervous? I hope everyone that is listening to this podcast has already voted. It's November 5th, last day to vote. Let's do this. Like we've said before in the podcast, you don't have to vote for every single office if you don't feel like you have enough information. You don't have to vote for every proposition in your ballot if you don't think you know what the best decision is. But you do have to exercise that power. So make sure that you cast your ballot, make those choices. I know some of them are not easy, but best of luck to you in your decisions. We know that you can use that power for good. While we wait for election results, which we know it's going to take a few days, we wanted to bring you a special episode. Last week, Yesenia and I went to Cal Poly's Hispanic Servant Institution Symposium called Adelante. Cal Poly is the university here in the Central Coast that it's in the town that we work and live in. And Cal Poly has been this journey to become a Hispanic Serving Institution. So what is that? What does that mean? So Hispanic Serving Institutions, or HSIs, it's really not a new idea. Originally in 1990, the White House established a White House initiative on advancing educational equity, excellence, and economic opportunity for Hispanics. But this initiative was reestablished and expanded in 2021 by President Joe Biden through executive order. Since then, the administration has been investing over $15 billion on Hispanic serving institutions. And they have done it through the American Rescue Plan, but also in different ways where they're really investing in institutions that want to make sure that they are serving the Hispanic community in the best way. And you might be thinking, why are they doing this? I know. It's hard to trust when something good happens to us. But really, it's just an investment. It's a financial investment. We will be sharing a few more data points later on. But some of the things that we learned were that, for example, by 2030, the Latinx community will make up 78% of new net workforce. That means that for every 100 people in 2030, 78 people will be Latinx. So from every 100 people that join the workforce, 78 will be of Latinx descent. So that is huge. That means that right now our federal government, this administration at the very least, is thinking, look, if we're going to have such a great amount of workforce that are going to be Latinos, Hispanics, although the names are not interchangeable, if we see this community becoming so important in the future, especially for our workforce, then we need to invest and make sure that they are the most prepared, the best prepared. And also, let's call it for what it is. This has not been happening for centuries. So right now is an investment in. This is really a DEI type of effort, diversity, equity, and inclusion type of effort, where we are investing in the community that is going to be serving the country. So that's really why it's financial. It's financial. But it's also a really great program. Now, there are a few things that each institution needs to meet for them to become a Hispanic serving institution. It's not just like, oh, I want to call myself that way. You actually have to have an enrollment of undergraduate full-time equivalent students that is at least 25% of Hispanic students. Cal Poly for the last couple of years has been working to meet that number, and they just met that number. So that 25%, and although as they mention it very clearly through their symposium, that's not the goal. That is just the baseline, and they're going to keep working on increasing that percentage of enrolled students. But it's a huge milestone for the university, knowing that it has grown and it has been doing more intentional, targeted work in the last 10 years. Now, what happens once you become a Hispanic serving institution, which Cal Poly is in its journey to become? Well, then there's going to be more opportunities for universities or institutions like Cal Poly to apply for all this funding that is available to Hispanic serving institutions. So again, it just makes sense financially, but at the same time, this is an initiative that is very much decided by the administration. So the administration changes hearts in the next year. If it's not the Biden-Harris or the Harris administration that wins, there are most likely going to be some changes to this. And we don't know what those will look like, but I doubt we won't be investing in Hispanics. Just a gut feeling. Anyway, what Hispanic serving institutions are and what's happening at Cal Poly, that's something that we're going to be sharing with you in this episode, mainly through interviews, getting a sense of where the community is at on it. Like, we're going to be talking to Ernesto Reyes, who works at Cal Poly and just is an overall amazing community leader and community member that we have gained here on the Central Coast. We'll also be talking to Alexis Espinosa, who's just one of the most amazing students that you could ever meet. He is so proud of his culture and what it means to be Latino. And he just gave an amazing panel. He was part of an amazing panel, this symposium. We were able to talk to him a little bit after that panel. And we're also going to be talking to Dr. Bea Maki-Cao about what it's meant to lead this effort and how they're feeling about getting to this 25% and overall what it means to her as a Latina, so as a chica política. So without further ado, enjoy this episode. Bye.
Hola, chicas políticas. What a great day. I'm so excited. We are here at Cal Poly. And Rita, cuéntame. There's so much going on right now on this beautiful day at Cal Poly Mustangs. Go Mustangs.
Yeah. There's so much work to do, Yesenia. I feel like we have been saying it for so long, and now joining this space where students say it, where staff says it, it's like, okay, we have a university backing us up on some of these challenges and barriers that we have been talking about now for years, right? What did you think about the panel and the data points and all of that?
Well, congratulations to Cal Poly for meeting the mark of being able to be one step closer to being a Hispanic serving institution. I think that's a great milestone, but I think there's still so much work to do, Rita, in the sense that in the academic front, we can say, okay, we've hit these benchmarks, but then now what is the lived experience of our Latinx, Latine population? And Rita was a badass, per usual, that got up and asked a question. It's like, okay, Cal Poly is doing this work in these four walls, per se, but what happens to students? What happens to faculty outside of these four walls? What happens even when we know that there are still big strides to be accomplished? And what are those relationships with those nonprofits, those organizations, the grassroots movements that are happening here in San Luis Obispo County, which we know we are still very behind. I mean, just even this week, I'm hearing about another story, which I know, Rita, you've touched on multiple times, of working professionals of color that basically have to ask themselves, is today the day that I'm going to leave SLO County? Because I am not being heard, I am being overworked, I'm being gaslit, all of these things. So while I think Cal Poly is pushing for this recognition of becoming Hispanic serving institution, we also need to have those uncomfortable conversations. So thank you for asking that question.
Yeah, you definitely talked about the question better than I asked the question, I think. But yeah, I think that's so true. And right now we're sitting on near the Chumash Auditorium, seeing students walking by. And I was just talking to a student, like, if you really look around, you don't see that diversity of, like, culture enough to feel like you're at home. It's very, very culture-less. And I don't know if, like, campus are supposed to be that way, but it definitely doesn't help people's sense of belonging, right? It's like...
Well,
I feel like we constantly struggle with our identity, Rita. Obviously, you being an immigrant, myself coming from immigrant parents, and we're navigating this world for the first time. And when you don't have the support system, when you don't have your family, when you don't have your community that you were raised as a safe space, it's like, where do you go? Sometimes it's as simple as going to that panaderia. Sometimes you just want that plate of comfort food. Sometimes you just want someone to say, échale ganas. But the reality is, I think for the most of us, including myself, including Rita, I think I can speak for her, there are days that it's really, really hard. There are days where it's extremely challenging that I think we're all just trying to survive. We're all just trying to make it through and say, okay, I'm here. I'm supposed to be here for a reason. I know that I'm making the path straighter for others. But the reality is I think as long as we keep on having these conversations and speaking our truth, speaking our lived experiences, I think hopefully it creates a ripple for people to want to acknowledge that and sit with it. Sit with it, because I think there is, I mean, we're here sitting in the quad of Cal Poly and we're looking around and I'm like taking a quick assessment, which is what, if you're not a person of color and you're listening to this, just know that when you are a person of color walking into a meeting and into a room, best believe your friend who is a person of color is assessing who looks like them, who is another Latino in the room, who is another young female in the room, who else is out there, and we're taking that assessment right now, and I'm not really seeing a lot of that diversity. But that's not to say, Rita, that I do applaud Cal Poly and their efforts in making those strides, because it does have to be so intentional that you need to make sure that you're pulling it academically, making sure that, I mean, there's a Dream Center here that is a welcoming space for Latinx students. So I think there's a lot of synergy right now, and that's what gets me excited, Rita, is that I feel, I've said it before on this podcast, right now is the best time to be a person of color.
Yeah, believe it or not, it is. So if you're a person of color, know that there are conversations happening that have not happened in the past, and we gotta leverage those conversations, efforts, intentions, and really make it better for the next generation. I think we can leave it there right now. We've had gotten really good interviews from staff, from Dr. Bea Makikau. Huge shout out to Dr. Bea Makikau and Dr. Denise Isom from Cal Poly Office of Diversity and Inclusion. You guys are doing such great job. You're killing it. You're really the reason why there is more connection between the community and Cal Poly. So huge shout out to them for putting this symposium. And we're talking, maybe we're going to record another podcast directly from Election Day, perhaps. Less than 7 days, only a few days away. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, definitely. Share with loved ones if they're feeling not hopeful, jaded. Have them listen to our previous Chicas Politicas podcast episodes. We still have time, y'all. We still have time. This is not over. There's still plenty of time to call, message, encourage, especially the Latino community that shame on Donald Trump and others for their claims of, once again, attacking Latinos and saying that Puerto Rico is an island full of trash. We do not support that. We do not believe that. And once again, y'all, here is a camp that is literally letting us know the value that they believe we have. But we're not that, right? We are not that. We're strong and we're making progress, and much in the style of Cal Poly, seguimos adelante.
Woohoo! Ernesto, thank you so much for just being willing to answer some questions. We just left the first part of the HSI symposium, Adelante, here at Cal Poly, and we heard from students of their view of how much Cal Poly is doing to making them feel like they belong, but how much work there is ahead, right? One of the students just mentioned that they really want to stay in the community after they leave, and kind of really talks about how the community outside of Cal Poly really doesn't represent them. Cal Poly is doing a lot of work, but how did you take some of the questions? Like, how is this something that you hear often from students? Is something that resonated with you? I'm just very curious about your take, because I know you moved also to the county very recently, or to the area, to the Central Coast area very recently. This sense of not really belonging, and how early we are in the work to get us there. Like, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, first of all, thank you so much even for bringing me on, because I think the work that the podcast is doing is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's necessary. It is vital. And más que todo, es importante para poder hablar de nuestras historias. I guess about talking about us and not being told what we are by others. Mm-hmm. So I think to answer your question directly, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that the students are saying what they're saying about the community of SLO, the community of the Greater Central Coast area. Mm-hmm. Because for myself, you know, I'm a professional. I'm not a young one anymore. Like, I'm kind of past that youth moniker. And I oftentimes weigh in my mind, my heart, and in my physical and emotional space, am I safer on Poly's campus than I am in the community itself. Mm. Right, and for me, that's a very real reality. Mm-hmm. Not just because I'm a visibly brown man, but we also think about the other aspects of the community at large, right? The community is kind of split between the folks who are quote unquote woke. Yes, we're on the diversity tip, we're on the inclusion train, and others who are like, we want to make America great again. Like, the reality of that's what it is. And I think many of our students see that. They're not dumb. They're just tired. You know, there's a huge difference between being oblivious and willfully ignorant. And I'm choosing not to take this battle on today because I already got to make sure that I'm on my 10s on campus. I don't got that much gas left. Plus, it's expensive to be in town. Right. And so I think that's what comes to mind and what comes to heart more than anything else is thinking about how the city of SLO has kind of moved and changed since 2020. Again, I moved in recently at the end of the summer in 2023, so about over a year ago, but it did take me long to kind of catch the vibe, to catch the, all right, cool, like, folks are nice. And I need to still be a little bit wary, because just because you're nice doesn't mean that things are comfortable, they're safe. And so if these are considerations for someone who has been up and down the state of California, what does it mean then to land in a place that I've only ever kind of been driven through, if at all? What does it mean for me to now establish people, place, community, space, and future here?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because it's something that I've been talking about with a lot of people about recently. I'm just like, let's just bring it to the basics, right? And you, as a senior coordinator for clubs and organizations here at Cal Poly, you probably see that a lot. Not that you're speaking from that title right now, but I'm sure you speak to different students that come from different communities, are part of different clubs, that have had or have a hard time, just like some of the students on the panel, to just see their future here. And how I was just talking to someone after the panel of how you go into a grocery store and you don't see families with little kids that are people of color, because it's just really not safe, right? Yeah. It's to have your kids grow in a majorly white community, where not because the community members themselves have bad intentions, but the kids end up getting bullied just because of the color of their skin, of what they look like, how they talk, what they eat, what they smell like, right? Things that are so cultural that we're so proud of end up being those things that make us stand out and make us become a target. And when we don't have teachers that look like us, when there's no staff that really look like leadership that looks like us, and when there's not a system that protects us and our kids, then how can we be expected to have our kids just grow in this area? We will move out, and it just feeds this cycle of not belonging, right? Like, I appreciate what Cal Poly is doing, especially with the HSI, Hispanic Survey Institution effort. Do you find hope in any other initiatives that you have seen, or is there something that you would like to see in the short term of, like, hey, these are like some things that it would be really great to see around that would help me feel more seeing or valued? Or is there something that's already happening maybe?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question, because I think oftentimes so much of what we think about is not about us, right? Especially within communities of color at large, right? Not just the Latinx, Latina community, but I'm thinking about where are all my Black brothers and sisters in SLO? Mm-hmm. Let's be honest about it. Like, you can count on one hand with the same number of weeks and the same number of months between the time you saw a Black family in SLO. Mm-hmm. And that says something. That means something. Mm-hmm. It's not to call out a lack of effort, but it was spoken in the symposium this morning, and it's a very important thing to say. It's numbers will only tell some of the story. Percentages will only say some of the story.
Exactly.
Right? Historically white, culturally white. That is where the deep tissue work happens, right? You can make percentages work for what you need them to work for, and that's important. But at the same time, the recognition of that is key, because then that is what does the work of belonging. That is what really makes the work of inclusion last. I think in terms of things that I've seen or things that give me hope, again, part of the HSI symposium, you know, the HSI Adelante initiative is important. And I think continuing to even like check and challenge that, not in the terms of what isn't happening, but what can also happen because of the work that's been done, right? I think one of the things that always comes to mind is as diversity comes and goes, essentially. Inclusion lasts longer, belonging lasts forever, right? And ensuring that not just for Cal Poly, but also for the city of SLO at large, is to make sure that when we're talking about DEIB, even more deeply, like DEIJ, justice, like the justice piece, that's so hard. It's tackling those culturally white norms and expectations, right? Supremacy culture, like this, it's very real, right? It's not just limited to white supremacy culture, but supremacy culture from a, you know, a heteronormative perspective,
able-bodied
perspective, right? All those things from a linguistic perspective, all those things matter. And it gives me hope that we're having those conversations and not just saying we've done great.
Yeah.
And let's move on to the next thing. Like, yeah. It's always a part of a deeper conversation. And I think what really gives me hope is the fact that there is space to push back against the notion that we are just slapping a diverse paint job onto a messed up car.
Yeah.
Right, like if the vehicle is messed up, no matter what it paint, you can paint it with all the colors of the rainbow, all the colors of the wokeness, all the colors of liberal politics, all the progressive values, and that's the paint job. But the vehicle doesn't run, then it ultimately becomes what many of us have fought against for a long time, which is it's just for show. So that's what kind of comes to mind in that respect, where it gives me hope that we can ask those questions, even if they're tough questions, of the people who are doing really tremendous work.
Yeah, and pulling in also the county, right? We got a county supervisor join the event today. I hope some of the words move them, because we have seen the city of San Luis Obispo. Obviously, there's so much more work to do, but they have been doing a little bit. I have not seen the county even do that little bit. So I think there's a lot more that we can ask our elected officials. And we always take it back to like those politics, but our identities have been politicized for so long. And we are seeing it now in this cycle of, you know, going into elections, election day. And so we need to keep our elected officials accountable for the spaces that we are currently living in and making it real and really calling for that justice that just is nowhere near but needs to come. Thank you so much, Ernesto.
Thank you always for the great work, and you know keep the podcast going, you know, echele ganas, you know, ponle chispa, you know what I'm saying? So it should be good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hey, Alexis Espinosa, yes. You were just part of the best panel that I've been, you know, witness of in the last 6 months or year. You guys were all amazing. How did you prepare for it? Were you all nervous, really?
Yeah, it honestly was all an adrenaline rush. I did not prepare for this. I actually was trying to find, like, the file for the questions an hour before this, and I couldn't. And I was like, you know what? It's, like, going to just be speaking from the heart, I think that's where it all came from all of us. We were all saying we're very nervous, but I think ultimately we knew what we wanted to get off our chest and say that has been on our mind. So I think that's why it was executed really well on everyone's end. Yeah.
So you knew it. You knew it. Yeah, even though you didn't know it, but you knew it. Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys said so many truths out there. And, you know, we had a really good mix of people, I think, in the audience listening to truths that should be said more often. And you really, although it was just like a little window into the perspectives of students here at Cal Poly that are Latina and Latinx, that go out to the community and don't feel like they want to stay. And that's like one thing that our podcast has been talking about, just like how our community has been made the way that it is by design, right? This has not been, maybe it had been, you know, some conscious actions by a few, but really also intentional, very conscious policy, programs, investments by the many. Mm-hmm. And so the window that you all gave us today by bringing up really truths about what the community should look like and the very basic things that you would like to see, in your ideal world. You mentioned a little bit about maybe having like a Dia de los Muertos festival, maybe having the biggest one in the Central Coast here in San Luis Obispo City, where people really feel like, I want to go see my son who goes to Cal Poly, right, but also just enjoy the community. What other things do you have in your mind for that vision? Because I feel like that should be the very minimum, right? Just providing that cultural this is San Luis Obispo, right? Yeah. We have Atascadero, Paso Robles, Santa María, Arroyo Grande. The fact that we can't have, that we don't feel the culture, it's so concerning. What are your thoughts?
The reason I brought up the Dia de los Muertos festival is because my father passed away my first week of Cal Poly, so that's why I do really feel like I would like him to still feel with me, especially during one of our biggest holidays for the Latino students and just the Latino community in general in SLO. We also have the space and we have the beauty in SLO to execute this very well. Honestly, like, just any holiday related to our culture and just our heritage, like Hispanic Heritage Month, right? Like, even if we make it just kind of like giant, like mechanical bull, tacos everywhere, you know, like getting all of the vendors who sell tacos, antojitos, all that coming together, just a huge festival in general. But for specific holidays and for specific events, just because I feel like, because those are so enclosed in our culture and we know what each one of these means, like Cinco de Mayo, we know what that means, right? Like, it's something that should be celebrated here and not just in our hometowns, right? Wherever we grew up, obviously, we knew about it because they celebrate it there. A lot of the panel was from Salinas, so I'm sure that, like, they have something there in LA. There's definitely things, right? So just feeling that here and feeling that sense of culture here. Because, again, like, our families don't really feel welcomed on campus, and there might not be anything, or at least not much for them. There's La Casa, but it's a little awkward to bring my grandma and mom to La Casa.
Sit here.
Yeah, with a bunch of students that are trying to study. So if I could bring them to the community in general as a whole, that would be great. Like, Corazon Cafe is a perfect example of providing community within SLO County itself.
Yeah.
But then, like Bea said, there's, like, these pop-up restaurants, right? Like, Mexitai was, like, that ice cream, the rolled ice cream in Antojito place. They just recently closed down. Yeah, and I just noticed that because we had a fundraiser with Fruit Paradise for LBSA. So it was, like, it did kind of make us really sad because it was a Latino-owned small business, and it closed down, and it was only there for like about a year and a half because I remember when it had just started.
And Bea mentioned that the pop-ups, right? Mm-hmm. We call it pop-ups because businesses open up and then you know that they're most likely not going to last for a long time because just it's so challenging, it's so expensive, but also so many limitations, and there's not really a culture right that has been built. You know, I really, really appreciate how you have your culture with you so much. I moved from Peru 12 years ago, and I don't have any family here in the Central Coast. Most of my family lives in the East Coast, and it's been really hard to hold on to my own culture, like from you know, traditions that I really wish I could still have here. You know, even from, we were raised Catholic, so Christmas there, it's like on the 24th. No one does anything here on the 24th, and it's just really sad to go to sleep without doing anything.
Yeah.
And then trying to make it up on the 25th in the morning, which I know is not something that I grew up doing, but even just little things like that. And yeah. I really hope that you can continue taking that culture with you and being so... and so good at weaving it into, like, everything that you're doing, it feels like, Alexis. I'm so proud of you, of all of you.
Yeah.
But what are other things that you would like to see in the near future, I think, here at Cal Poly and the community as a whole? And then I have one more question that's a little bit more into politics, but
okay.
I'll let you decide if you want to answer it after.
Yeah, okay. Just a little bit more of what I'd like to see here. I am a big... guy on culture and family. I think I made that very obvious in my panel and in this conversation as well. So now it's more so towards things that will represent our culture and family, right? Bringing that together. So food, dancing, huge, right? In our culture,
yeah.
It's like one of the main things. It's what brings us together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's what brings us apart, but then it
yeah.
brings us back together, right? You argue at a meal, you know, you have another meal, okay, you're friends again, right? It's
yeah.
like one of those things that's very important.
Yeah.
When I first joined Audi, one of the questions was like, it was a rice question, so it's like, describe the rice that your family makes, right? So it's just like, although food is very important and similar, it's different, right?
Mm.
It's kind of similar to everyone else, right? We're all similar but different in our own
yeah.
ways. My grandma has talked about like coming here and getting a food truck and just going around the streets and selling food, you know, because she's like, I can't believe you have no good food.
Because there's no good food.
Yeah, exactly. Because when she does come here, she did come and help me move out. She's like a big truck, right? Super tiny lady, huge truck,
yeah.
and she wanted to come help, and I was like, okay, but then it came time to eat, and I was like, oh, dang, I don't know where to take you. Took you to, I don't even want to name drop the place, but they didn't have great tacos, and she was super disappointed.
Yeah.
But she's huge on cooking, so if there could be, like, a fair or
yeah.
something where families just bring food,
yeah.
and, like, I know that may have to have, like, some permits involved and stuff,
yeah.
but it's just about, like, the gathering, the culture, the
yeah.
purpose, the
yeah.
intentionality. On campus, I would like to see, like we're saying, just more Latino families, even if it's like some papel picado. I know that Audi's like working on some other things, like, I don't know if you have to cut this out, but like plants and stuff, like plants, murals. That's something that
Cal... No, this is so good.
Okay, that Bea has started to like try to ingrain within Cal Poly itself as a campus.
Nice.
So that just walking around, you remember your culture, you remember something
yeah.
from back home. It's just a little reminder of like that a piece of you is here besides you, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's like something that I look forward to seeing. The smells, right? Like this smell in the auditorium is huge because there's not many like times where you're gonna smell this type of food
yeah.
in Cal Poly, right?
Yeah. That's such a good point. It's such a, you know, all senses type of experience really has to be for us to feel at home. Yeah, no, I love that. Now to the more political question, I almost asked to the students, but also know that it's not really the topic necessarily, but it's so, everything is so connected, right, in all culture. I'm wondering if you have seen an impact on students when there is like rhetoric out there about who our populations are, right? I
yeah.
see ads, like I was watching the baseball game yesterday and the commercials, there's just like, Latinos being shown as like murderers, rapists, and like in the worst, there's nothing positive, right?
Yeah.
It's all like, we're the worst, we are dangerous. Do you see that having an effect on students? Is that something that students talk about here?
Well, I will answer this because I do love politics and I really educate myself on this. Again, this is all like literally thanks to Audi. I did not think I had the confidence to like really speak up for myself. But I've learned a lot of statistics and everything in general. So the rhetoric definitely does affect students on campus, like I'll tell you that. Even though like sometimes we joke about it, like, oh, like I can't get that job because like that's not for me, you know, like not to the extent of like
yeah.
being murderers or anything like that, but just that feeling of like we can't do it
yeah.
because of how people portray us. Or even just like feeling like you have to do something that's more comfortable to you. Like a lot of our students are mechanical engineers. And when I was, I think it was like my second year, like first quarter, I asked like my friends, like, why didn't you guys do business, you know, like, because they want to go into a job that ultimately is going to get them like a managerial position or something of that sort. They have no business background, and it was really sad to hear that they felt like they couldn't be professional enough. But I totally understood that because I felt the same way.
Yeah.
That's why I felt like I needed the professional development or I wasn't going to get to where I wanted to. Like, yeah. Before any of this, I did not speak up in class, never raised my hand, didn't even want to learn about politics because I was scared to. I was scared to form my own opinion because I knew that I was the type of person to speak up about it.
Yeah.
But that rhetoric of, like, Latinos being pursued as someone who can't keep up with politics or can't make a certain amount of income or can't get a job or... like, isn't professional enough, you know? Like, these are all things that Cal Poly students are feeling. And because I'm so involved in the Latino community, it is sad, you know? And that's why I also said, like, it's important to stick together and remind ourselves of these resources. Like, the professional development aspect, there's, like, our, like, 100 classes, right? Or there's certain professors that, like, 100 classes means, like, the resume, workshop classes, intro classes, so things like that. Yeah. But then there's also professors that offer, like, professional and leadership development classes specifically for that. So it's just knowing that those are out there and, like, you know, you could put this for credit, no credit, right? It doesn't matter. It's just ultimately to help you. And it's the point is to help all students. It's not specifically, like, oh, Latino students need to take this either, because all types of students feel like they need professional development. It's just that imposter syndrome of feeling like that's something we have to have.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely trickles down, right? Yeah. And we sometimes start believing it, like, subconsciously of... mm-hmm. And also affects how we go into spaces and how people see us, for sure. So, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing, Alexis. Again, we're so proud of you. Oh, my gosh. You did amazing. And I'm just happy to see what else you do. Just know that we're cheering for you.
Thank you.
So, Bea Maquicao, Dr. Bea Maquicao, you are leading the HSI effort here at Cal Poly. How are you feeling about it? Wow, you guys have reached the percentage that you, the baseline that you guys were going for.
It's really exciting. I think, you know, when you're in the work, and I'm very much in the work, sometimes you forget to lift your head up. And I was with a student, I think, a few days ago, and I shared with them that we met the 25%. And they started crying, and I was taken aback. And they said to me, it is a testament to all of my years in school, to feeling alone, and to now feeling like I'm not going to be alone anymore. And for me, as a first-generation Latina, it was a good snap back into reality of the impact that this work has. And I feel humbled, I feel privileged to be at the forefront, collaborating with so many incredible people that I respect. And driving in this morning for today, I just kept saying, I was looking at my hands and I was like, my abuelita's with me, my mom's with me, my papi's with me, and they would be so proud. And I think, I always ask myself, like, how do I repay them? What's the gift I give them back? And this moment was like, this is that gift.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that you have that feeling, because it's true. One of the students in the panel mentioned how we really are about familia. I can't speak for other people's in other people's culture because I'm not other people's culture. But I know that I walk into rooms too also thinking about my mom a lot and about my family in general. Mm-hmm. So you're going to make me cry. Okay, so you guys shared some really cool data points today. Data points that I'm really happy that we share with everyone in the room, because we had different elected officials. We had city manager present and faculty, staff, so many community leaders, you know, making a difference out there. Some of the data points that you mentioned were that there are 412 emerging HSI across the country, which is great to just know that there's a federal initiative to make our institutions or universities Hispanic serving. But really putting it into context, right? You also shared that there were 6 million the Latinx population is estimated to grow by approximately 6 million every 5 years through 2060. That is unbelievable. And I don't think I had seen that data point before. But it sounds like people that are looking at the demographic trends are really thinking, okay, we got to start doing our work. And potentially, because like you shared also in this amazing slide, is the economic output of Latinos. We have reached $3.6 trillion in 2022. So it's not just out of the good of their hearts. It's also there's a lot of economic benefit, right? And making sure that the population that's already given so much, it really has the potential to give, you know, 10 times that amount of money into the country. And so how do we support the population to give that? You also share that by 2030, Latinx community will make up this 78% of new net workforce, mm-hmm. which is just incredible as well. How are these data points informing the work? Are those good to know, but really the goal is the work focused on the local need? Mm-hmm. Or is there, how are you seeing like the effort on its own from Cal Poly to like the efforts from the federal level? I guess I'm not familiar at all with how much support you guys are getting into the process at a federal level.
Yeah, well, we're not officially designated yet. And so when we become officially designated, we can apply for those federal grants and receive that federal funding. But I think the data points were important for me to share because when we talk about our goals as institutions, as organizations, we talk about them as in terms of striving for excellence, being the top tier at our market, attracting top tier talent. And the reality is that we can't meet those objectives without the Latinx, Latine people. And so I think there's an imperative for understanding where our country, where our state, and where our region is going demographically, and what communities are at the forefront of progress and economic growth and mobility within our communities. But also it was important for me to share them in the way that I shared them because we as a nation really struggle to push past our stereotypes, our misconception of Latine people through a deficit model. We are in a political climate where Latine people are being stereotyped, being stigmatized,
mm-hmm.
and there is, and it's a failure of recognition of our economic contribution. There are misconceptions around immigrant populations and their contributions to our economy, and we have a responsibility to correct that, and we have a responsibility to recognize the incredible capital, cultural capital, but actual physical capital that Latine people contribute to our communities and to our country. And if we have any hope of being leaders in any effort, we can't do it without Latine people.
Yeah. Awesome, Bea. Anything else that you would like to share about the HSI effort here at Cal Poly, or something that you would like listeners to know about us? I really think that every time I come to an Adelante symposium, like, we need to tell more people that you guys are doing this. But you guys are doing such a great job. Anything else that you'd like to share?
I say this all the time, it's my favorite quote, but our effort is really rooted in doing this with purpose on purpose. And the reason I say it over and over and over again is there is no shortage of institutions, organizations, local community organizations who have commitments to equity, diversity, and inclusion in their mission statements, in their value statements. But that is wholly incomplete without what that looks like in practice. And so there has to be intentionality, there has to be activated engagement around the work, and our values have to reflect what we do in practice, because that's the only way to do this work with integrity, and that's the only way to do this work that honors all of the folks who came before us, and the shared stories and lived experiences of our Latinx, Latina community.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bea Macacal. That is our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening. What do you think? Did you like our live episode? Do you have any comments? Do you have an event coming up where you want Chicas Politicas to be in there? Just let us know. Yesenia and I are always out there, and we're just figuring out the technology to make sure that we can record from anywhere. I think this kind of worked out, right? We really enjoy the interviews. And yeah, so thank you so much to Cal Poly for all the efforts, for your invite. And let's go adelante. Bye.